Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Podcast brought to you by the Manchester Evening News. My name is Dan Murphy, and joining me today, hopefully watching Australia pub an upset of all upsets live in Technicolor with me, is Mr. Tyrone Marshall. Ty, how's it going?
Good, thank you, Dan. Good, yeah, enjoying another World Cup surprise. Although I think this is only just about qualifying as a surprise, given Denmark's performances so far. And in half an hour's time, when we've done this podcast, we might have egg on our faces when Denmark have won 3-1.
Oh, you never know, you never know. I don't know, Denmark, I think they've been pretty rubbish in the top. Everyone's dark horses. Oh, well, BBC iPlayer is like a minute behind here, but they're on the ascendancy once again. It must be, I tell you what, they might score again here. Live commentary on the Talking City podcast? No, it's gone out. Yeah, you know, the World Cup, what's your thoughts been on it since last time we spoke? I still think a lot of the games have been pretty mediocre. There's been a lot of dull, drab football. But when you're getting stories like this, as I speak here in the 63rd minute of both final games in Group C, you've got Australia going through on the same number of points. They scored a great goal from Leckie just a minute or so after Tunisia went ahead against France. It's a much changed French side because they're already sailing through. But Tunisia, if it weren't for Australia going ahead, could qualify themselves. So I don't think it's been a great one for quality, as maybe we kind of expected before the tournament. But for shocks and drama and tension in these last games, at least, and a couple in the group, was it Group H or Group G, a couple of days ago, I feel like the tension's really ramping up now. And it's a shame that these group formats are probably going away after this World Cup.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. The group format works perfect, really. Every one of these final, what would be 16 games in the last round of group matches, every single one had something riding on them. There wasn't a single dead rubber, which shows you how good this group format is, really. There was two of the 32 teams that were out in Qatar and Canada. I think there was only three that had already qualified in France, Portugal, and someone else who'd won two out of two. Can't remember off the top of my head.
Brazil, maybe?
Brazil, yes. Brazil, yeah. So there were three teams that were through, two that were out. The other 27 all had something to play for. Like I say, every single game has something riding on it. The format is perfect for this round of games, and you do get that great drama. Even Iran USA last night, going right to the end, and things can change at the last minute. Got these games on now where it's so topsy turvy. You know, Tunisia beating France at the moment, probably thinking what a result that is, and then it's not going to be enough for them as things stand. So, yeah, it's a great format, and it is a shame we're going to go to this nonsensical three group format and all God knows what else in 2026. But yeah, it's a good format. But like I said, I don't think it's been a vintage tournament so far. There's been some great shocks and some great stories, but not a whole load of great games.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But you know, at least the drama, as we say, is kind of notching up a level as we go into these final games. What has there been? You know, what's been your favourite matches so far? Because I must say, while the games haven't been great for the most part, the 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. kind of format of it has been pretty good. You know, rolling out of bed, sticking the footy on all day during work. It's been a relief, something completely different, especially in these cold winter months. And I must say, the other day, Cameroon-Serbia, the 3-3 game, was absolutely fantastic. And on the same day, Portugal-Ghana as well. Portugal just narrowly winning 3-2. Those are the sort of games you're really looking for. And wasn't there even a South Korea match as well?
Korea-Ghana it was, yeah.
That's the one. That was so dramatic. 3-2, that one, wasn't it? So dramatic. South Korea absolutely raging at the end because they couldn't get the corner, even though they took 12 beforehand, which had done absolutely nothing of note with. That's the sort of, like, I feel like once you get to, even if the quality's not the best, the passion, the energy, the stories is what kind of takes it to another level, takes it, just makes it special, international football, no matter, despite all the obviously downsides to this tournament.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, the World Cups are always interesting. It has been the format probably fits in with the time of year in a way, with the four games a day. And like you say, the first game at 10 a.m. is definitely enjoyable, especially for those of us working in the day, and especially in an industry like this where, you know, it's our job to be abreast of what's happening in football. So it's an excuse to watch it, really. And the four games a day format for the first seven or eight games has been brilliant. I wouldn't like it. I mean, it's changed anyway in 4 years, but I wouldn't like it long term. I quite like a bit more space between games to kind of get into it and grow into it. You know, there's four days between every country's games in the group stages. It's normally at least five, and you get a bit more space to think about the last game and get excited about the next one. We've not really had that, but yeah, that format's worked well. I mean, the 10 a.m. games were generally a letdown until Cameroon-Serbia, which for me is the best game of the tournament so far, I think. Really entertaining game. I thought for 20 minutes, Serbia looked like the best team in the World Cup for 20 minutes, and they've got a fantastic team. I think they were my dark horses, and they could still get through. And for either side of half-time in that game, they just played some phenomenal football. And Cameroon made it easy for them, but they did look brilliant and then kind of imploded. So that was a good game, and that was a great day with South Korea-Ghana being 3-2 straight afterwards. But yeah, there's not been, you know, you asked me there what's my best game in a tournament beyond those two. I mean, Germany-Spain was technically pretty good. Mm. You know, other than that, I can't think of a whole load of candidates that are springing to mind, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as I say, it's been more, the best games have been, you know, the dramatic ones. I feel like it's when teams are of a similar level but still have good players, that's when you get the best games. Obviously, Germany and Spain are two teams, perhaps the most, probably the best coached sides at the World Cup. Mm-hmm. I'd say Spain, especially, with Spain are probably the team that play the most distinctive style, I'd say. The team that I saw, I've got probably the best manager in the international game at the moment, I'd wager. He's done so much in the club game, Luis Enrique. Some of their young midfielders in Gavi and Pedri. City's own Rodri, kind of, as we touched on last week, kind of revolutionising things as a false centre-back. That's when you get the kind of the great technical games. I thought that match was amazing. Jamal Musiala staking a claim as one of the players of the tournament so far. Absolutely excellent. I think Bruno Fernandes is up there as well. He's been really good. And then I say you get the scrap. It wasn't a great game. Australia's 1-0 win over Tunisia the other day. A great winner from Mitchell Duke, the most Australian sounding name on planet Earth. It's certainly taken a wicket or two in an Ashes series, I'd wager. And then the drama of it all, the tears, I think Senegal, Ecuador yesterday, that was largely very dull, but the tension of when Ecuador score and then Senegal come back straight afterwards, it's just, that's what you want. And as long as there's drama, which we're getting now, at least it'll pick up a bit. But in a nice change of pace and a nice change of things, there was a severe lack of drama for England. A 3-0 win over Wales in what could have been quite a nervy affair. We saw how England did against Scotland in the Euros a year ago. That's, I know, obviously, the atmosphere at Wembley was a lot more raucous than it was in Qatar. But, you know, a national derby, an international derby, always calls for a potential banana skin. We've seen, the World Cup in... Ooh, what would it have been now? When was we last in a group with them? The Euros? 2016 Euros, wasn't it?
2016 Euros it was, yeah.
We've seen how England only just got out of jail against Wales in that match. So it could have gone either way with Wales needing something. So I felt the way that England professionally, clinically, and quite smartly at times dispatched them with minimal fuss was quite impressive. A 3-0 victory. I thought England had played pretty well in the first half, but all the goals had come in the second 45. Marcus Rashford, the star of the show, with two. But the middle goal was tapped on by Phil Foden. We'll start there, City's star boy. The clamour was reaching peak proportion ahead of the game. Southgate, I wouldn't say bowed to the pressure, but it certainly satisfied the pressure and the criticisms by playing him, and I thought Foden delivered. Apart from Rashford's goals, Foden was probably the best player on the pitch, alongside maybe Jude Bellingham once again as well.
Yeah, he was very good. Both of the wide players were good. Foden's performance, it was a funny one. He produced some real moments of quality, but beyond that was far more peripheral than he is for City. Even in the second half was memorable for that run which won the free kick, for the goal beyond that, it didn't really feel like he was that involved in the game in the second half on the left. He didn't really do loads, I didn't think. And England kind of took their foot off the gas after that 2-0 and they had it comfortable then. And the attacks were being focused down the right. Even once Rashford went off, you could see it was that sort of left-hand side channel of Wales they were looking to exploit. Callum Wilson nearly got in there a couple of times. But yeah, it was a very good performance from Foden. When he had the opportunity to shine, he did. You can see why everyone's desperate for him to start. I mean, you put him and Bellingham in the same team and you're thinking that's world class. You would say that he hasn't performed for England the way he does for City, but you know, it's difficult for players like that who are so used to performing in a set system to then go and do it. And especially when they're so admired for what they do for their club, it can be hard sometimes to go and recreate that exactly for England. But we know him and Bellingham are generational talents. We want them in the same team if possible. But it is going to be interesting to see what happens going forward now, because it's not as simple as, I don't think, the two wide players score and they stay in. We kind of saw that after the Iran game where Sterling and Saka scored, then they got a game, didn't score, both dropped. Now Rashford and Foden have scored. Will they both stay in? It's going to be interesting to see what he does against Senegal. And does it, as good as Foden did in that second half, it does still feel like we're kind of searching for his best position in that England team.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll touch on Senegal after we deal with the Wales game. But yeah, Foden, I agree with you there. Like, I think there's been kind of this misconception about Foden's position this season. I think a lot of people, understandably know he's a great player, but maybe not see enough of him at City. And by far his best position this season for City has been on that right wing. And that's when I do think he was the most involved against Wales in the first half. Now, Southgate's getting a lot of credit, and rightly so, for swapping them at half-time. And that's obviously where the goals came from. Great positioning from Foden to smash home his goal. And Rashford, of course, his second goal, England's third, came from his position on the right and cutting inside. So you can't blame Southgate there. But Foden, I agree with you, he wasn't as involved in that second half. And as you say, that's maybe because England kind of took the foot off the pedal, made loads of changes and conserved energy, which is the right thing to do. But in the first half, I thought he was England's, as you say, he's maybe not involved all the time, but I think that's more to do with England don't play like City, where City, everyone is involved all the time. Guardiola's constantly moving the ball about from left to right, forward, backwards. Everyone's involved pretty all much, a lot of the time. Whereas England, they're trying to do this passing game. It's obviously not as good or refined or as quick. It's a bit laborious. It can be at times. Even though I do think, we saw the worst side of it against the States when it was quite laborious, not a lot of invention, not a lot of movement, and it didn't work. It was just Stones and Maguire passing to each other for the best part of 90 minutes. Whereas I thought it worked a lot better against Wales is because Foden was in there. And crucially, as we moved on to, Kyle Walker making his return. I thought in the first half, Walker and Foden's link-up play, which, when City had been at the best this season, has come with Foden on the right, with Walker behind him. That link-up play was really nice at times. I think there was a point in the first half when Foden, again, made a jinking run in through that right side and some good passing with perhaps might have been Kane and Walker. Yeah. And he's not involved all the time, but I feel like when he's got on the ball in that game for Wales, he always looked like to be doing something with it. He was a bit more of a spark than England had against the United States. And that's not to say Saka can't do it, of course. Saka was brilliant against Iran, but Sterling's never let England down. He has obviously showed all the doubters wrong the last Euros. But against the United States and against Iran as well, I don't think his club form might be affecting him a little bit, because he doesn't feel like he quite has that same magic about him at the moment than Foden does, who is, maybe not playing his best football at the moment this season, at least since the United City derby and the destruction, because City have gone downhill a bit as well. But Foden's certainly more informed than Sterling at present.
Yeah, definitely. I would think so. Foden's having a very good season. And I agree with you. He was better on the right against Wales. It was a pretty, I think Rashford had the best chance, but he had a decent chance later in that half. He looked bright. There was some good link-up play. And he's another that can play both wide positions, but he probably looked better on the right. And I think you can switch them if you want to stretch the game. And we've seen England do that. I think Foden and Rashford came on their, natural footed wings against Iran, I think, when they both came off the bench. Both played. Foden came on the left and Rashford on the right. And both looked... Well, Rashford took his goal and scored, didn't he? But yeah, it is a tricky one. And Sterling, I mean, he's been very good for England over the last 12 months, but you're right, his club form is pretty poor. He's not been, you know, he's not been influential for Chelsea at all. He did score against Iran, but you'd think of those four wingers, maybe five if you even include Grealish there, he's probably the one that is vulnerable. And I do think that you want to get Foden in that team. And yeah, I think I'd be sticking with Foden on the right and Rashford on the left going into the next game and having Saka as an option. And if you want to switch him at some point, you can. But, you know, it's great that you can have wingers that switch. But I still think, as well as Rashford did on the right, I still think they're better coming inside. And then you've got the option to, every 10, 15, 20 minutes, if it's not working or if you want to do something different, to swap them over.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, I thought it was quite refreshing from Southgate that he did make those changes in a game where England were pretty much through and pretty much had top spots kind of sewn up. But, you know, it could have gone wrong. It could have backfired. There was stuff on the line. I'm surprised that he had it in him to make those changes, to refresh. And maybe the big part of that is, as he's said several times, you're going to have to use the squad due to the condensed nature of the tournament. There's a lot of games in a short amount of time. You need to keep everyone fresh. And I think he did that well, but I didn't think he'd have it in him to take Sterling out. He's been such a mainstay for him. And Mount as well. Mount has been a brilliant player for Southgate. He's one of his favourites. So to take both of those out, I thought it really worked and shows that maybe he has learned a thing or two from the last year's Euros campaign. With any luck, we'll see that with his management in games as well, because I think the biggest criticism Southgate has had in the past is his management mid-game, his substitutions, is how he can affect a game. And, you know, is swapping the forwards, flanks isn't exactly a revolutionary idea or anything. Most teams just do it automatically throughout halves, but he did do it against Wales and it did kind of make a significant difference. I know a lot of fans are kind of craving now, you know, not satisfied with just craving for Foden to be in the team. The craving is now for him to play centrally. I just don't see, you know, as Southgate himself has pointed out, he doesn't play there regularly for City. I think he's only started there once this season, and according to Transfer Market, he only played there six times last season. So Pep said in the past that he hasn't got the best ball retention. He's a bit of a risk in losing possession in those central positions, which is what you want, because he's an exciting player who takes risks. You are more of a liability of losing the ball when you're doing that. You don't want to lose that energy, especially when he's, you know, so young and without fear and has so much natural attacking talent. So I just don't see a world, especially when we're going into this knockout stages now and potentially, you know, not to overlook Senegal, potentially tough opposition on the horizon. I just don't see a world in which he can play Foden in that central position, unless maybe Phillips comes in from the start, but then you just get complaints about Bellingham not playing, who's been excellent in two of the three games.
Yeah, I don't think there's any chance we see Foden in a central position, to be honest. And I think Southgate's right that he doesn't play that role for City. And when he does, City dominate every game they play. England don't. It's just the reality of it. The role would be different. And there's always a clamour to get more attacking players in the team, get Foden into midfield and play Bellingham and Rice. I mean, that'd be an absolute disaster in the knockout stages. It's just naivety, really, to want a midfield like that. And Southgate's right. You know, Southgate gets a lot of incredibly unfair criticism given his record now. But he is a really good tournament manager at getting through games. And to be fair to him, I think he's quite good at making changes from game to game. It felt like the Euros last year. He did kind of, you know, Foden started the first two and then came out. I think Saka came in and played pretty well. And then I think Saka came out for a game and does feel like he's willing to change game to game based on the opposition, just maybe not fast enough to sort of alternate in game. But the other thing about tournaments is he's right as well that they're won on clean sheets. It's clean sheets that get you through games, that get you through tournaments. And it's very often that the team with the most clean sheets will win the tournament. And part of that is they've played an extra game than a lot of other teams. But I think I saw a stat the other day that of the last 24 knockout games played by World Cup winners, which is the last six tournaments, maybe. There's 17 clean sheets in there. So it is defensive solidity that gets you through tournaments, which is why he's not suddenly going to throw caution to the wind and play Foden in midfield and just go gung-ho. I think we're going to still see this 4-3-3 with Bellingham and Rice and one of Mount or Henderson, which does kind of leave Foden, Grealish, Saka, Sterling and Rashford all competing for two places. But what a great position to be in as well, with that strength and depth and players to bring off the bench too.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember a time when we were clamouring for a left winger or any sort of attacking talent, you know, the dark days of Stuart Downing being in the squad and he being the great bastion of hope. It's quite a far cry from those days. But, you know, I say England have yet to concede. Oh, sorry, they've conceded two goals, haven't they, of course, against Iran. But two clean sheets on the spin now. They're also the highest goal scorer in the tournament at the moment. Obviously, England have played a few more games then. One more game than Spain, who are right behind him on eight, and obviously Brazil and Portugal and Cameroon and the like. But so have such a solid foundation and still have the goals coming through. That's, you know, that's best of both worlds at the minute. And a big part of those clean sheets is the really, once again, great centre-back partnership between Stones and Maguire. Now, I'm not sure if he'll stick. It'd be very interesting to see when we get, if touch wood, you get to those really tough opposition, if he goes back to a back three or he sticks with what's been serving well so far. I think Walker, as we'll touch on, being back certainly helps him in that regard. But Stones and Maguire have been brilliant so far, and I thought that against United States and here against Wales, maybe they didn't have a lot to deal with, but everything that came their way, they just dealt with really well. And both of them on the ball have been excellent and been a real driving force for England. It's good to see Stones. You know, he hasn't had much opportunity at centre-back this season. He's been playing right-back a lot. But he's really putting in another great display for England.
Yeah, they're a really good partnership for England. They're, I don't think it's any secret that they're very close friends. They go back a long, long way. Two Yorkshire lads, very good relationship. And I know they got pelters. So I think Maguire might have got pelters anyway for hugging Stones after the derby at Old Trafford a couple of years ago, when I think Stones had scored, hadn't he? And Maguire gave him a little hug afterwards and got criticism for it. So you couldn't possibly be friends with any rival players. It can't happen. But, you know, they know each other's games inside out and played together for so long that they probably even played for the counties at times. And I know they've both said how far back their relationship goes. And they've been great. They've been fantastic in tournaments for Southgate. As you say, it might be that, especially if we end up playing France or someone like that in the quarterfinals, that a third centre-back comes in. But they've both been really good. Their quality on the ball for England is excellent. You know, there's not many teams in this tournament playing a high press. There's not many teams in international football playing a high press. So they do get time to pick passes. And when they get time, they're both very good. And Stones has been excellent. It is a good relationship. Maguire's been really good as well. It's you know, his ability to perform for England in major tournaments compared to what he produces at United is incredible, really. He was England's best centre-back at Euro 2020. He's probably outshone Stones again this tournament, although both of them have been very good. And yet he's a figure of fun at United. It's very strange, and I think there's clearly an element that the style at United doesn't suit him. He's not a halfway line defender. He's a defender, penalty box defender, and that suits him with England. But it is a good partnership to have. Like you said, there's been two clean sheets. The two conceded to Iran didn't matter. The one, I think Maguire's fault when Taremi ran off him against Iran, but he was white as a sheet when he came off just after that and had been calling to go off due to feeling sick. So you could kind of see that in the way he played. But yeah, they are a very good partnership, and that relationship they have from all that time together shows on the pitch.
Yeah, and it was very nice for Maguire to give us one aspect of his United calamity when he went through and just absolutely wellied the ball. Like, I've never seen such absolute Sunday league-esque when he just absolutely hammered it out for a throw-in eventually. You know, more good news for City, as I say. Kyle Walker making his return to action after a lengthy spell on the sidelines at this point. He underwent groin surgery just in October, I believe. So to come back so quickly and play well in his return was great to see. He played just under an hour, I believe, before he came off in the first round of substitutions. And Calvin Phillips coming in, he obviously returned just before the break and had a few cameos, started against Chelsea in the Carabao Cup, didn't he, I believe, and played a few more off the bench. So it's nice to see him back in action. A nice ball for Rashford for that third goal as well. Them two being, you know, getting minutes under the belt is obviously great for England going deeper into the tournament. As I mentioned, I think if we do get past Senegal and there's a potential horrible game on the horizon in the quarterfinals, we may see that back three return. And if it does, I'd imagine it'd be Walker on the right of that, because he's done so well there for England in the past alongside Maguire and Stones. But even though it's good for England, it's also great news for City. We've had no injuries yet, as I believe on the City front during the tournament, and to see them two back in action and looking pretty good is certainly a good sign for Guardiola. But, you know, as the football, as we know, kind of comes back thick and fast as soon as the tournament finishes.
Yeah, it's worked out quite well, especially with Phillips getting a decent chunk of minutes last night. He clearly needs that. We haven't had just four substitute appearances for City in his career so far at the Etihad. So yeah, it has worked out quite well. It's far better, I think, that they're both in the squad and training during this period and getting some minutes than being left out and having that couple of weeks off and having to kind of build up fitness again. There is an issue for clubs in how you kind of reintegrate players. You don't quite know what their training has been. The intensity of international football is clearly nowhere near the intensity of the Premier League. So it's a big thing to jump straight back into on the 28th, as it is for City in the Premier League. But for players like Phillips and Walker, who are just back from injury, who needed minutes, you know, it's ideal because they'll probably return to City a lot fitter than they were and a lot sharper than they were when they left. So it has worked out pretty well. I think Phillips' role is probably going to remain coming off the bench at the moment, but I think that will certainly do him good. Walker might get another game as a right-sided centre-back maybe, and might get minutes as a right-back behind Trippier. But I think for City, their situation's probably working out pretty well, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And fingers crossed it continues in that vein. Shall we give a word for our beleaguered neighbours, Wales? They have, their first World Cup since 1958 has ended in, you know, not the best way. They were obviously destroyed 3-0 by England and, you know, lost to Iran previously. Had their one moment, and Gareth Bale's late equaliser against the United States. But on the whole, it's been a mighty disappointment from Wales. And I think, I know I said before England, when I seen the starting lineups, to see that they had three players in Bale, Aaron Ramsey and Joe Allen, who were all recently recovering from injuries, not fit to be cut. You know, you can understand them playing Bale, a player who can provide the magic and a moment, match-winning moments out of nowhere. You can carry one player most who isn't capable of running at his full pelt. But to have three in the team, and before Allen in the previous games, Wayne Hennessy has hardly had a minute at Nottingham Forest this season. You can carry one player, but you can't carry two or three who are not just fit. And it really backfired for the Welsh.
Yeah, it did. It looked obvious from the first game, to be honest, even against the USA, as well as it did second half. It looked pretty clear that they couldn't continue with Bale and Ramsey in the same team. And I know that's their, I know that's kind of how their, what their success has been built on. But at some point, you've got to move on from it. And this wasn't the same Bale, and even worse, it definitely wasn't the same Ramsey. I mean, Ramsey, I know Bale only lasted 45 minutes the other night, on what night was it? Tuesday night, Monday night. But, but the form of Ramsey and Ramsey's contribution in central midfield has been completely non-existent. He just looks so far off the pace, so unfit. And I'm amazed he's lasted as long as he has in a lot of the games. Because like you say, they've been carrying two players in key positions, especially central midfield. And they've allowed themselves to be dominated in every game, really, because of that central midfield area. And, you know, I know quite a lot of Welsh fans with being from a border town in Shrewsbury, and they will all say that their success was in getting to the World Cup, which is true. But once you're there, you've got to do yourselves justice. And it just felt like they didn't do themselves justice in any game. They got a lucky point against the USA and they were awful in the two games after that. They barely threw a punch at England last night in a must-win game. So it was a really poor performance, and it did feel like kind of the end of this era when they've been to three major tournaments. It's a shame for it to end like that for Bale, because his commitment to Wales and the Welsh cause has been absolutely phenomenal, really. Mm-hmm. What a leader for them. And just that desire to turn up and be a leader in a camp where they hadn't qualified for so long. Wales have had some good players before, but none who ever went to those levels to kind of be the man to build a team around and to always be there and to lead them in that way. So, you know, he deserved a better ending than that, but it was pretty obvious that it wasn't the same Bale in that team. It definitely wasn't the same Ramsey, and there was just too many players who weren't on it that they were carrying, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I know they haven't got a great strength in depth. Their other midfield options play for the likes of Swindon and Dundee United. They haven't got a lot of depth there, but you know, surely someone who can actually run about a bit is better than a talented player who can't. You know, Bale said that this isn't it for him. He'll be playing for Wales again, maybe as another, you know, the next Euros in his sights. But it just felt a bit like it was sentimental from Rob Page, wasn't it? He trusted, or maybe he felt like he had no other option but to play his best players. But it just struck as, you know, you deserve this, you've earned this, you can have it regardless, even if it does end up costing us. As I say, I don't think, you know, getting there is a massive achievement, especially the way they did it. And I don't think being eliminated and not making it through to the knockout stages is a failure in itself, but to just leave no impression, to really have stunk the place out for the three games, you know, say one goal, a penalty, not really looking close to scoring any other time. I think that's the, you could be happy you've got there, and I'm sure the overriding memory will be hopefully that Bale penalty and that great moment, but it must leave a sour taste in the mouth. So just to go out with a bit of a whimper, not really put up much of a fight, especially, you know, against England. There was a, I think the only time they came alive was against, after Foden's goal when it was 2-0. They had like a little space, a little moment of play where Maguire headed it and Pickford had to make a really good save actually to readjust. And I think Dan James had a shot just before that. That was their only little spell and the game had gone by that point. So yeah, to go out so meekly, I think is going to be quite disappointing for them.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, they didn't do enough. They didn't impress enough. They didn't leave any mark on the tournament, really. It was a, you know, the tournament was a complete non-event for them apart from that Bale penalty. And, you know, like you mentioned before, I don't think Rob Page had much choice but to play Bale. He is, you know, he is the talisman for that team. It's clear what he brings. And even on one leg, you kind of want that threat there, and that even as much for the other team as for yourself, Iran and the USA facing Bale would be aware what he can bring and what he can do. So you want him there. But I think Ramsey was, including Ramsey and sticking with Ramsey was probably a mistake because he made no impact on the midfield. And in a lot of these games where, you know, a lot of these games are being played in midfield, basically, you need to win that battle. And too often Wales lost it because they were carrying passengers in there, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. But moving on, as we say, England have got a last 16 date next Sunday with Senegal. They got through by the skin of the teeth by beating Ecuador. I think they've done really well, Senegal, to qualify without Mane. That must have been such a psychological blow ahead of the tournament to lose, you know, your talisman, your best player by some distance. But I must say, I haven't been very impressed with them at all. I think Ismaïl Assar has had moments. He dispatched a penalty against Ecuador really well. He's the other kind of good attacking player they've got in there. But apart from that, I must say, I've not really been impressed with them. And not to sound all mighty English and whatnot and to overlook opponents, but I think kind of speaking kind of analytically, England should be dispatching them with, you know, quite comfort, not to jinx everything, touching all the wood around me, but they should be beating Senegal, shouldn't they?
Yeah, they should, and they'll clearly be favourites for it. You know, Senegal defensively have looked a little vulnerable. Edouard Mendy's carried his ropey Chelsea form into the tournament at times. But they are a threat going forward, a less of a threat without Sadio Mane, thankfully. If he was playing, you would definitely be fearing the worst. But without him, they're not the same team. But, you know, they are still the champions of Africa. They're still probably Africa's best team, even without Mane. So I still think it's going to be a real test. They've got players like Ismaïl Assar who can really hurt teams. They were pretty poor against Holland, but they've done all right since then. So yeah, I think it's going to be a test, but it should be one that England are winning.
Yeah, absolutely. And we look forward to watching that and talking about it next week on the Talking City podcast. Thank you, everyone, once again for listening. I'm going to try and get out of this outro without hopefully anything happening in Denmark, Australia and distracting us, because there was Matt Ryan nearly did a massive blunder there and He got away with it. Come on, the Aussies. But as I say, thank you everyone for listening to the Talking City podcast. You can follow all our Manchester City news during the World Cup break over on manchesterevenings.co.uk/Manchester City. You can get all our articles straight to your newsfeed over on Twitter @ManCityMEN. And you can get them on Facebook feed as well with our Manchester Evening News-Manchester City page. You can follow Tyrone on Twitter @ Ty Marshall _MEN. There you go. And you can get me on Twitter as well, at Dan Murphy MEN. But once again, everyone, thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next week, hopefully talking about another brilliant England win. And if not, well, maybe we won't be doing a podcast because it might be too embarrassing. But either way, we'll certainly see you soon. But until then, goodbye for now. Ta-ra.